The biggest challenges for me is understanding how people are consuming art, that's changed, and it's changed in a way that I don't know that I totally understand. I mean, I don't tweet. There's a lot of those things that I don't do, and I know that they're really important and that a majority of people actually use this as a way of following arts. So I think part of a challenge is thinking through how we make art accessible to people who are consuming all kinds of media. And you read about symphonies now where they're like, okay, go ahead, tweet, you know, do selfies, take pictures. And I have a hard time imagining myself enjoying that, but that's not necessarily the issue. The issue is how one consumes it can be very different. I mean, I think it might be fun to go see a Shakespeare play in Shakespeare's time, throwing food around and all that kind of street life in the middle of it, but it's not what I'm used to. So I think trying to think ahead to what it could be and how do we shape it, or what's the interface with the new technologies in terms of all arts consumption. And I think another thing that's interesting, that I'm not sure where this is all going, but I think like the work, some of the work that goes on at the goat farm, that there's a lot more kind of blurring of, you know, this is a dance piece, or this is a theater piece, or this is a music piece, or this is a creative writing piece, that there's a lot of sort of things that are developing that are mashups or hard to put into a category. So then what do you do if it's not in a category? How do you find who's going to come see it? I think funding is always a concern. The arts at Emory have, in a sense, some state support. You know, I mean, we have some funding from the college, but it isn't always enough. But it's also it's a very different landscape for us than it is for people who are in the community, not within a university system, who are making art. And I really feel for them and admire how entrepreneurial some of these theater companies are and how they're working with synchronicity, sort of trying to figure out how do you create art and how do you also impact the community. And I think that's, I don't know if that's a challenge, but I think that that's something that we all need to be thinking about in terms of, I don't want to say that art doesn't exist for art's sake, because I really firmly believe that you can't turn art into a political cudgel. But I do think that we are surrounded by issues that I think art can be exploring them and using that material.
Thinking about the smaller companies, social media may be a godsend for them, because without budgets or with limited budgets for marketing or advertising, what used to be word of mouth, now tweets or Facebook posts or whatever, can do a whole lot.
Right. Things can go viral, you know, in a way that I think that would have been really challenging to have happened before. And I think the level of communication of what the small companies are doing or arts groups are doing, if you are interested in knowing about it, you can get all that information in ways that would have been really challenging from so many different small groups. I think one of the downsides is from all of the sort of social media is that then the larger media don't always, I don't think that it's, they feel excused from doing it, but the resources are allocated. And so, you know, like the whole idea of there being people who have a critical voice that's kind of writ large has really changed. Not everywhere, but certainly I think in Atlanta, that's, it's a very different landscape than it was.
Some things about that are scary. I mean, it's very democratic. It is certainly engaging, but there can be personal baggage, mean-spirited remarks. How do you feel about the public weighing in on the value of an event?
There's a huge place for it. What I miss is the counterbalance of someone's voice who has a vested interest in sort of a maybe more of a neutral interest evaluating the work, whether it's theater or music or dance or visual art. There is a level of knowledge that can allow you to make a different kind of judgment about what an artist is doing than just someone who's consuming it. And there's nothing wrong with someone who's consuming it and going, well, I don't like that because I don't understand it, but it shouldn't just stop there. So I think that that's what's missing is the voice of someone who has seen a lot of different aspects of a particular art and can kind of make comparisons and references and think about it in a bigger way.
your area is theater. Your love is theater. So many people consume entertainment at home now.
Mm-hmm.
And people work long hours and feel entitled to stay at home and cocoon or relax. How can we compel people to realize that nothing can replace the experience of live performance?
You're right. There is absolutely nothing like something live. And I think if we could figure out a way to convince people that part of the liveness is the unpredictability of it, that it can be fabulous. And sometimes it can be dreadful. I mean, we all know that. It's not a guarantee. And I think that the liveness of it is what's so fabulous about it is that it can just be what you expect, or it can be something that just takes you by storm. And that if you don't physically be there, you'll never know. It's very different watching a movie. I mean, you can be deeply moved by movies. I love the movies. But the movie is a fixed thing that you take in, but you don't give back. And I think the thing about live performance that's really exciting, whether it's music theater or dance, or going to a gallery or going to a museum, is that it all is different because you are there.